Americans are hearing about another potentially deadly virus, the Hantavirus. Now, after COVID, many Americans are asking a very important question. Should we take this seriously, or should we be wary of another round of fear-driven headlines, government overreach, and experts demanding we surrender our freedoms in the name of public safety? What exactly is the Hantavirus? Who is actually at risk? And have Americans learned to question official narratives after what we experienced during the COVID years? Joining me tonight are two medical professionals who were willing to challenge the establishment when many others remained silent. I am Scotty Nell Hughes, and this is America First. COVID changed more than our healthcare system. It changed the relationship between the American people and the institutions they were told to trust. We were told to follow the science, yet the science often changed. We were told lockdowns were temporary. We were told school closures were necessary. We were told the questioning government policy was irresponsible. And millions of Americans learned that asking reasonable questions could come at a personal and professional cost. Now, there's this new virus is making headlines, the Hantavirus. And unlike COVID, Hantavirus is not spread through casual contact. It is rare and is typically associated with exposure to rodent droppings in barns, sheds, cabins, and rural areas. It can be serious. But for most Americans, the risk remains very limited and highly situational. So the question is not whether Hantavirus is real, because it is. The question is whether public health officials have learned how to inform the public without using fear to justify unnecessary government intervention. You see, conservatives, they all believe in personal responsibility, informed consent, and the right of citizens to make decisions for themselves and their families. Is America better prepared to face a legitimate health threat, and whether the government has earned back the trust it lost during COVID? So, joining me for this discussion are two healthcare professionals who have become leading voices for medical freedom, informed consent, and government accountability. First, Meryl Nass, a physician and biological warfare epidemiologist who has testified before Congress on bioterrorism, the anthrax letters, and Gulf War syndrome. She also served as a consultant to the Director of National Intelligence on preventing domestic bioterrorism. Now, during COVID, she became one of the most prominent critics of public health policies that she believed lacked transparency and sufficient scientific scrutiny. Also joining us is Nurse Nicole, a registered nurse with more than 20 years of acute care experience and host of America Out Loud. She also has been a strong advocate for informed consent, bodily autonomy, and the right of healthcare workers to maintain their convictions while continuing to care for patients. Dr. Nass and Nurse Nicole, thank you so much for having the courage to speak out and for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Nass, I want you just to start off, what exactly is the Hantavirus, and how is it fundamentally different from the type of widespread pandemic threat Americans experienced during COVID?
Okay, well, the first thing we need to know is that in the United States, there are 30 cases or less per year of Hantavirus infections. They come primarily from mouse urine and droppings. And it does not spread person to person. So unless you are cleaning up a cabin where mice have been staying recently, and those mice happen to have been infected, you have no risk of the disease. You cannot catch the Hantaviruses in the United States from another human being. And the mouse droppings are only infectious for up to a week. So, you know, if mice were in their last winter, don't worry about it. However, it is a serious disease if you get it. It allegedly killed the wife of Gene Hackman and, you know, killed somebody in Maine a few years ago. But again, extraordinarily rare, maybe one in 10 million cases a year in the U.S.
And it's interesting that you say that, because this is something that's been around for a while. And yet, it's just been recent headlines that have put this to be the top of almost every newscast for over a week has been talking about this virus because of what's happened on a ship and the blogging that's been happening on social media from this. Nicole, from your experience in the hospital, how should Americans really balance these healthy caution with the understandable distrust that many now feel towards public health messaging, especially even in this situation where a new disease has made itself to be breaking news headlines?
Well, that's a very good question, but we definitely want to make sure that everyone understands that the hantavirus has been around for decades and decades. This is not a new virus. And when it comes to, you know, those who want to put information out there, we need to be very clear on awareness and education. Obviously, any loss of life when it comes to a particular virus is something we want to take seriously. But in the scheme of things, heart disease is the leading killer in the United States, with over 800,000 people dying annually. And that's not something you see blasted on the news every day. So, and they're picking this particular virus at this time to make it a headline. And again, those who sell the panic sell the cure, and trying to really put things in motion to start possibly some chaos and fear. And we just want to make sure that people understand that this is something that's very manageable, very rare that you would come in contact with and potentially become sick from.
Well, that's the thing, Dr. Nass, because as she pointed out, this is very rare, but it's been around. We're also hearing reports of Ebola being exposure. I mean, it's just day after day, there's a new one that's coming out that's been around, but they're making headlines of it. So, Dr. Nass, from your perspective, is there a risk for people with specific health issues that we need to be concerned about that we have not been concerned about in prior weeks?
No, I don't think there is. What's happening is today is the opening day of the yearly World Health Assembly, the World Health Organization's yearly meeting. The World Health Organization wanted a pandemic treaty to be approved, and in particular, something called the PABS, Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System. They needed approved, and it has not been approved. This is a plan that Bill Gates and others who are the biggest donors to the World Health Organization came up with, in which nations would go out and look for deadly viruses and bacteria in their own countries and then share them with the WHO, which would then give them to pharmaceutical companies, universities, etc. And if drugs or vaccines were developed as a result, then the nation that provided these deadly organisms would get royalties. So that's the plan. This would have increased the budget of the WHO about 10 times more than it was already getting to manage this whole pandemic planning program that it wanted to go forward. And it's been stalled for the last several years. And so because this week it will be discussed again, as will the WHO budget, having an Ebola epidemic and a hantavirus epidemic happening at the same time gives the WHO some cachet to say, look, these are real. You need us to help you take care of them. Give us money. Let us do the pandemic planning that we've been trying to get done for several years.
So, Dr. Nass, you're basically just saying this is job justification at the cost of American trust and security, and not even American. I'm going to say this is global trust and security. This is job justification, which ultimately comes down to dollars and cents and control. That's where you feel like why this is all of a sudden becoming the priority of the headlines and the media is falling for it?
It's even more than that. I mean, it's control also. Just think, if the World Health Organization controlled laboratories that had Ebola, Hanta, you know, deadly COVID, all sorts of deadly organisms, and they could share them with whomever they wanted, you know, one of those entities could release them deliberately or by mistake, and, you know, manage the WHO would then manage the outbreak, and they could lock us down, they could force vaccines, they could do all sorts of things. This is what the WHO was attempting to get accomplished, but hasn't been able to yet. And so if they can scare us enough and get a treaty of that type signed, they will be able to basically manage the world whenever they declare a pandemic.
Nurse Nicole, I know you're listening to this, and I want to get back to exactly what she addressed on this, because it's very alarming. But do you believe that the reason why we're actually questioning this today, because there was very few when COVID first came on the scene right. that were questioning it. I like to tout, I was one of those that was. But do you believe that now people like myself and others, even you in the healthcare industry, can be more skeptical because they felt like they were misled during COVID, and this skepticism is justified, and I hate to say lemonade out of a lemon situation, but this is a good thing?
Yes.
Let me go with the nurse real quick. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Nash.
That's okay. Yeah. I just think that the public is more skeptical because there was a lack of transparency, right? We had a lot of issues during the pandemic where, you know, certain things were said and done that did not align with what we were seeing in real time. And so to hear another virus being discussed as something new, which we know is not, the information there is lacking. People are a little bit more keen to educate themselves and be aware, putting themselves to understand a little bit more of what we're dealing with, and so therefore becoming more educated and questioning it because we still don't have the transparency and the government doing what they should have with COVID. So yes, very much so.
Well, that's the thing, Dr. Nash, you're in the medical profession. You just told the world about this meeting that's going on, the discussions that are going to be happening there. 99.9%, I think it's safe to say, would not have any idea what the World Health Organization calendar looks like, doesn't necessarily put it on their own Google calendars. What practical steps can families say when these things start to come out and say, and you get this idea of a new introduction of some fear? What are the red flags that you say this is something I need to be looking at, or this is just another way to manipulate the public's mind?
Well, probably what I look at is different than what, you know, the average person looks at. I want to know specifically what kind of PCR test is being done to diagnose people. I want to know what the entire genetic sequence of the hantavirus or the Ebola virus. And I want to know whether certain tests have been done on people who we think were exposed that might actually tell you whether they are incubating the disease a couple of weeks ahead of time. We haven't heard anything from the CDC about the details of their testing because they don't want us looking over their shoulder. They did the same thing with COVID. They don't want us to be able to criticize them, but they want our trust, you know, and how can they earn our trust if they don't allow us to look over their shoulder? Now, what can the average person do? I think the average person just needs to put all this aside and realize this is a game, you know, they're running the game on us again and ignore it. There are more people who have come back to the United States that were exposed on the MV Hondius ship. And they have, you know, they're being monitored by their state health departments, or they've gone to Nebraska to be quarantined there for 6 weeks. There's one woman who is basically on life support in France who did come down with Hanta. And everyone else is just being watched. And there were three deaths. So three deaths, one person on life support, a bunch of people being watched, and that's it. And yet we've heard about this nonstop for at least a week. So really, forget about it. Even in Argentina and Chile, which has the only hantavirus that spreads person to person, even that particular hantavirus only very rarely spreads person to person. 90% of the people who've come down with it got it directly from rat droppings. And even if you share a household, the chance is like less than 10 or 20% that you will catch it. If you are in the same household with someone, if you're sleeping in the same bed, the chance might go up to 1/3. But it's not terribly contagious. And in the United States, nobody is going to catch it. I really don't think anyone will.
Well, and that's the thing, Nurse Nancy, as you're looking at this and looking at the skepticism that I think we've all three can agree does exist amongst most people when it talks about viruses that are coming on. What do you see? And what would be your suggestions you would give to families, whether or not when they should panic and when they should just dismiss the situation?
Well, that's very difficult because the media doesn't help you, right? They want you to panic.
Right.
Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think what's happening is they're using fear to try to drive the narrative, and people need to understand that, like we've been saying, this is a very low risk viral disease when it comes to person-to-person contact. The likelihood of coming in contact with this is very rare. So we want people to understand that, you know, basic hygiene, hand washing, keeping your surfaces clean, making sure that your environment is clean are things that you can do very easily to protect yourself. And again, this is not something that even has any kind of vaccine or anything in the mix right now that you would want to even entertain anyways. And so it's just basically monitoring and having that supportive care if you were to come in contact, which again is just doing from the healthcare standpoint of, you know, watching you and seeing what symptoms you may develop, if any.
Well, Dr. Nass, Nurse Nicole, please stay right here with us, because when we come back, did COVID permanently damage trust in our healthcare institutions, and what needs to happen to restore confidence in medicine and our government? Stay with us. Welcome back to America First. Joining me again is our panel. We have Dr. Meryl Nass, medical doctor. She's also a biological warfare epidemiologist. And we are also joined by Nurse Nicole, host of America Out Loud Radio. I want to start with you, Dr. Nass, because what are some of the most important lessons you believe policymakers should take from the COVID response?
Well, I think policymakers are used to trying to control narratives. And what we need is for them to realize this is public health. Everybody is entitled to make their own decisions about public health and to get the highest quality information possible. And so public health officials need to start sharing information with the public, useful information. Sometimes it's only information that professionals can interpret, but nonetheless, they need to share it if they want to regain trust. Otherwise, we know that they are making political decisions and not necessarily medical decisions.
Well, and that's the thing, Nurse Nicole, because how did the pandemic reinforce the importance of bodily autonomy and informed consent?
Well, it made sure that people understood what it means when you have those rights taken from you and when the government comes down and makes blanket decisions. You know, medicine is not a one-size-fits-all. We must make sure that informed consent and bodily autonomy remain at the forefront, that even with public health initiatives or concerns, that people still can have free will to do certain things to take care of themselves and their communities without locking people down, masking them, making them, you know, stay away from one another and purely isolate them only to roll out a vaccine that they claimed was safe and effective and wasn't. So this is a huge ordeal that people took from the pandemic due to so many being harmed and are no longer with us and are ensuring moving forward they ask more questions before they decide to comply with the narrative.
Dr. Nass, I know it probably frustrated you during the pandemic because it did so many in the medical profession to see things imposed that they had, things they had to do in government in the hospitals imposed by the government that you knew was counterproductive to people's health. You knew that isolating people at the end of their life was only going to make their lives span even shorter. You knew things like masking, even putting respirators, probably at times were not smart. Do you think that the medical community next time will be able to come together when they see the government imposing these ideas, possibly put together by one or two doctors or none at all, and say, no, this is actually doing more harm than what the pandemic is doing?
I wish I could say yes. I would give anything to say yes, but I fear that no, that what happened is the opposite, that doctors saw the people like myself who spoke out were challenged very harshly by the system. My medical license was taken away from me for advising people not to take the vaccine and by prescribing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for patients for COVID, both for prevention and treatment. So I think what doctors learned is if you don't go along with the system, you are subject to very harsh penalties because the public, you know, relies on its doctors and nurses to tell it what it, to give it the right information. And so if the political system and the administration feel very strongly they want something done, they're going to go after the medical professionals first. And that is what they did. They sent warning letters to thousands of doctors and nurses threatening to take their licenses. They only took the licenses of a few of us because they had so much bad publicity as a result. My own hearing at the medical board was broadcast by Epoch Times and CHDTV, and a million people saw parts of my hearing. And so it made the whole system look very bad. So they stopped doing that, but continued the threats.
Dr. Aswell, that's very unfortunate. It's infuriating to hear. Were you able to get your medical license back following everything that's come out regarding the vaccine?
No. Nobody admits anything about the vaccine. I mean, I was shocked yesterday that Pete Hegseth actually admitted it was experimental when military members were forced to take it, which of course is illegal if it's not licensed, and it wasn't properly licensed. The medical profession has still not acknowledged that there are any problems with the COVID vaccine.
That is absolutely infuriating, and you would think there would be there would be someone to represent you. I know that some medical doctors are all in a version of a union. That's what unions are supposed to do, is to protect protect the industry. And in this case, you were a victim just as much as everybody else. Your entire career, years of medical school, take it away from you for being right. And they've had to reinstate the people in the military that chose not to take it. Everyone else is having to correct their mistakes, but it has not been corrected or made right with you. And I apologize for that, Dr. Ness. That's not fair, because I'm sure we took a very good doctor out of the office, and I apologize for that. But that being said, Nurse Nancy, government agencies, they have no trust because of situations of what happened to Dr. Ness. How should we rebuild trust? How can we rebuild trust after so many Americans felt censored and dismissed for asking legitimate questions? And what could be the problem with this in the future?
Well,
Nurse Nicole, please.
No, it's okay. We just have to admit that it happened, right? We have to admit that these patients exist, that there are individuals that were harmed by the virus, that were harmed by the vaccine. We need people to understand and come forward that work in the medical field. I was one of them. I actually joined Dr. Merrill Nass and Mary Holland on the Vax3 documentary and told my story as a nurse who, you know, went against the COVID-19 vaccine. So we need more people to show their face, come forward, and say what really happened. We need the public to understand that you are accountable for your health, but also the decisions that are made, you know, behind closed doors, getting involved in your local and state government, making sure that you're showing up and that you're pushing back and asking questions, because otherwise, without this, we're not going to learn the next time it happens, which there will be a next time. We need people to understand that the little rights that you give up, you typically do not get back, and that you need to hold the line, is what I like to say, on the nurses' report on AmericaOutloud.news. We want people to understand that you are in charge. You elect these officials. We want people to understand the impact that you have, but you have to be willing to come forward and represent what you believe in and stand firm in your convictions.
Okay, well, while I've got you, Nurse Sakala, I've got to ask you, do you believe in the future that to frontline nurses, they felt extreme pressure to conform rather than speak openly? I have several friends, one of my best, who lost her job, just like Dr. Nass did, but she was reinstated in another hospital. Do you think this is going to affect future when nurses are called in to be on the front lines, that they will speak up when they see things not right or have questions and not able to ask?
Well, I would hope that the answer would be yes, but unfortunately the pandemic broke an already broken system and exposed it wide open. A lot of great nurses are no longer within the healthcare system and have moved on to other areas. So it is a very big concern with the nursing shortages that we already have, but also what kind of nurses are left at the bedside that may have complied and did not necessarily make the decision to speak up when they knew something was wrong. We don't fault those individuals, but we hope that we can move forward and learn our lesson and give, you know, vindication to those that have been harmed, which a lot are first responders and healthcare workers and military service members from the vaccine and the virus. So, you know, we hope history does not repeat itself, that healthcare workers specifically will be more empowered to come forward. But again, we need our community support, because those of us that spoke out, like Dr. Nass and I, we were blacklisted, segregated, coerced, bullied, received threats. It makes people not want to come forward because there's no protections in place to do so without you losing everything in the process. And as Dr. Nass said, some of them have never received it back.
Who's the one in these situations that are actually making the decisions? Are these non-compromised doctors and medical professionals, or are they politicians and government just looking for control and money and possibly more money from the pharmaceutical companies? Thank you so much for sharing your story. I have to tell you, Dr. Merrill Nass, it's heartbreaking to hear that you have not been given, I think, the justice that you deserve. Nurse Nicole, thank you for standing by her side. I have to think, if the good news is, maybe this will cause, if something is ever presented to us again in that situation, we at least know two voices that we can turn to and trust. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You know, the real issue is not simply the hantavirus or any virus. The real issue is trust. You see, Americans are willing to take responsibility for their own health. What they are no longer willing to accept is being told to silence their questions and surrender their freedoms. Conservatives, well, they understand that informed citizens, not unelected bureaucrats, are the strongest defense against fear and overreach. When government is transparent, people respond with confidence. When government uses fear, people respond with skepticism. And after COVID, skepticism may be one of the healthiest instincts Americans have developed. For all of us here at America First, stay healthy, stay sane, and thank you for watching.